believe we have a few minutes to do some question and answer with Tina. So there's a gentleman in the back with a mic. If you want to ask a question, please feel free to raise your hand. Yeah, and Tina will be up here to answer any questions.
Tina, this is Larry Eby. The time frame that you speak about in Canada is somewhat the same time as the Depression in the United States.
Yes.
My family lost their place in the Depression and followed a story somewhat similar to what you describe in terms of loss and poverty in northern Michigan. I just wonder, did that depression, was that a factor in what was going on in Canada? Do you know?
Was it a fact?
Was it a factor? Was the depression also up there that created some of the poverty that?
From. I'm not hearing well because my hearing isn't good.
Okay, was the depression also in effect, the depression that affected the United States?
Yes.
During the 20s and 30s and into the 40s, was that also a factor in what went on in Canada?
And a factor in what?
Was there a depression in Canada as well as in the U.S.?
Yes, yeah. Very much. It was the same one. Mm-hmm. It was the same. It was throughout the area.
And that affected your family?
Oh yes, very much, yeah. Nobody else wants to talk because I can't hear.
I'll try, Tina. I really enjoyed your book, and I know you and I have had conversation about that already, and I encourage all of you to read it if you haven't. What I'd like to know is there are so many facts in that book. I mean, I was just overwhelmed by how much detail and everything that you remember, and sometimes I don't remember what I ate last night. And how, you know, were you keeping notes all of these years with kind of this idea that you'd tell stories at some point?
I contribute my particular memory and my siblings' memory because we keep each other aware. You know, we talk about these things and so we know the same things. But I think we had nothing else. We didn't have a church in Saskatchewan. There was an English United Church, but with our parents not speaking English, I don't really know why we didn't go, we kids could have gone because we spoke English fluently. I don't know whether they were afraid that we'd be indoctrinated or why, but we stayed on the farm. So everything that happened on that farm, we had to know, you know. And I watched my dad shave and know exactly how he did that, you know, which he did first and which he did last, from beginning to end, because there was nothing else to entertain us. So I contributed to that. However, my younger sister, 2.5 years younger than I, remembers nothing. And I checked out these things in the book. There are a lot of quotations from especially Lena and Henry. Henry writes about farming, and Lena writes the family kind of things. Started with, I checked out my book and what? Oh, pardon?
You asked them to recall different things and compare.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of this you kind of borrowed from them, but
yeah.
I would say her memory really is remarkable.
Henry's information is very valuable. I didn't know very much about farming at all. You know, I was on the farm, of course, but he knew so much more. Also, everything seemed so important. We were so isolated. We had no German church. We didn't have the fellowship that we have in our churches. And there was so little to entertain us. Excuse me. My brother went gopher hunting and trapped them and. We girls went and plugged up the gopher holes so they couldn't come out and trying to help Dad because they were eating the harvest, you know, this kind of thing. That was what our life was about. We didn't have the external things. So going to school was a marvelous big window of opportunity. So it was terribly important to take in everything that happened. But now when it comes to the things that happened in Russia, our parents, my mother was a real talker, and she told us most of those things from Russia. But anything as far as dates and thing and actual facts about the wider picture than the family and their village, I have to look up. I have to look at Peter Dick's brother's, Cornelius's book. I had to look the statistics up in that book because I didn't have them in my head. And my parents weren't educated enough to know those things, so I had to look them up in books. But we kids were, and my brother hunted gophers and made money on it, he thought, and then Dad wouldn't be able to pay him, and et cetera. And we did it for the school one year. Our teacher said we'd get a penny for each egg and 5 cents for each gopher tail, a crow's egg. And so we climbed the trees and we killed gophers and cut their tails off and all this kind of stuff. How don't you remember that? You know, everything is important. And then in the end, the teacher says, I'm sorry, I had notification that the Canadian government is out of money and they can't pay you. Shoot, you know, and that was a downer. But everything was important because we didn't have TV, we didn't have radio, our nearest neighbor was a quarter mile away, and he could speak High German, but a different dialect. And he came to us over the hill. He was just one hill away. He came to us at our place all the time. He was our entertainment. That was it. No church. So school was a big thing.
You mentioned that you and Ray are the poorest in your family now. I'll give testimony to the Klassen wealth. We were in Alaska just a few weeks ago, and there was some work being done down the street. They were digging a hole to put a new generator in, emergency generator for the community. And in big letters on the side of it, it said Klassen Limited. And anyway, I looked up their website on the internet, and here's this Klassen company that has headquarters in Vancouver, but branches in Seattle and other Canadian cities. So, yes, the Klassens have gotten along.
My brother adopted a son, and his name is what? What's, pardon? Wilfred Klassen is an adopted child, and he has business all over there. And I don't know whether, was his name Irvin?
Oh,
his picture.
Victor
Klassen. No, I don't have you know, my dad was the only boy in the family that came to Canada. The others died. And so we had, one cousin went to Paraguay, so we had cousins there. And that could be one of them because we don't know them. But other than that, we don't know our Klassen relatives at all because my grandfather died when he was 32 and my dad was only 8 years old. So I'm not familiar with them except my brother who adopted some sons, two sons. He adopted them and one is Irvin and one is Wilfred. So I wondered if you were talking about him because Irvin does work in Alberta and he does very strange things.
I'm Lynn Miller, and Tina, I know that you've been through a lot of difficulties and hardships. You've told us that. But I also knew you as a woman of great and deep faith. Can you tell us a little bit about how your faith developed in such poverty and why you didn't rebel against a God who seemingly forsook you and your family? I know you're a woman of great faith, Tina. And I would like to know how you developed your faith in such poverty. It seems to me that you maybe would have felt like rebelling against God because he left you in such dire need.
I think my mother was a very outspoken woman. She talked about her conversion when she was young. My dad smoked, and that was a no-no later on, and he had to give up smoking. He gave it up freely. And he was not a person to say much about faith or anything. He was successful in giving up smoking. Now, what was your basic question? Well, I still to this day have problems with it, to tell the honest truth. Nobody did anything for us. Nothing was free. We worked hard for every penny we had. And so it's very hard for me to receive things from other people. It's also hard for me to feel I have had to work real hard on this. God loves me. Why does he leave us out in the cold then, you know? But when we went to church in Manitoba, all of the people were in the same boat. Their only hope was God. So we had Sunday school and preaching every Sunday. And it was the most important thing in our lives. My conversion? My conversion, I was 13, going on 14, and my sister-in-law, they weren't going together yet, but Annie Peters was her name. She turned 16, and I was almost 14, that's right. But we were the best of friends, and she came to our place during harvesting time, and the guys were thrashing outside, and she said she had something to tell me, and she was terrified to tell me. She had received Christ as her Savior, that it was a free gift to all. And I started crying because I'd been wanting this very same thing, but just wasn't quite sure how to do this. And so she led me to the Lord. And what else can I say about the youth? Oh, yes. Yes, the youth group was very important. We didn't have religious meetings at all, but we did social things together in the summertime, especially like things like anti-over or playing hide and seek in the garden. That's the kind of things we did. They were very pious. In fact, there was it was kind of distasteful to me. Everything was sin. So much was sin in this one person. Families especially projected this, and so that was something hard to live with. And so because God was a strict person who had given us just barely enough to live on, you know, just so that we wouldn't die. So God didn't seem like a God of grace. He seemed like a God that demanded judgment and justice. So that was hard. I struggled with that a lot. I have to really work out this to this day that God is a God of love.
This is Gloria. I'm over here.
Okay.
Just the process of doing this book, how was it painful? Did you get new insights? Just talk a bit about just what it was like to actually go back through your life, and if was that a worthwhile thing, or would you encourage others? Or
yes, if you've got a story to tell, it's worth telling. Did I say that about Maureen? No, I didn't say that about Maureen. When I was working for Senior Services, I said that, didn't I? And she was the one that questioned, and then I started writing things down. And it's that big notebook back there that's this thick with all the pictures. And I started with I Remember, because I wasn't going to make it in a formal book at all. And
But what did it do for you to do this?
The book?
The whole process.
Okay. It was very hard on my eyes. I enjoyed very much gathering the material and writing to my sisters and brothers, because them all being older, and my younger sister, as I said, doesn't remember anything. She let me do all the remembering. And So, but the older brothers and sisters, especially the three in the middle of the family, they got the bulk of the work. My brother had to do the field work, and the girls did all the, we called it stooking, putting up shocks. They did it for pay, and they made pennies a day, you know. And they would buy a dresser so that they could get married and have a dresser. That's how poor they were, just that much. Back to your question.
Yeah, I think Pat might want to say something, because when she finished her spiral notebook of the I Remember stories, it was very sad to read through. And so I think on the next edition, she intentionally put some humor in it, told more about life and culture, and didn't dwell just on the hardship. But Pat and Lynette, I think, read, you know, that was... And this book is dedicated to them, too, as you see in the front cover. But they, from their response to the first try, had an influence on what the book came out to be. So, Pat, why don't you say something?
Well, I think, too, that my cousins in Canada saw this spiral-bound book, and Mom was probably surprised and pleased that they were so interested in this. And I think for Lynette and I, as the only American cousins, it's a story that most of our peers don't really know. And in Canada, this is like every day, everybody has this story. You know, all of their parents or grandparents came from Russia. So, and we've always been real history buff type people. My sister is especially, since grandma was so into genealogy, Grandma Kaufman. And it was, you know, just having grandparents that you didn't speak the same language was strange. And, you know, people, we called her Funny Grandma because she spoke funny. You know, we just called this grandma, Grandma, and then, oh, we're going to go see Funny Grandma. Well, why didn't your grandma speak English? Well, they were from Russia. Oh, so she spoke Russian. No, she spoke German. You know, so it's an interesting history. And so, and I don't think for Mom that it caused her pain to relive it. It was just so liking to preserve history, especially for us being Americans and not seeing or hearing this in everyday culture like they did in Canada. Also, my older cousins, there's 27 of us. I'm the third youngest. My sister's the youngest. And I would, you know, I could literally pass some of my cousins on the street and not know my cousins. Now, my American cousins, we know very well. One of them's here right now, Rick Berge, my cousin. There's only 8 of us, and we know them so well. And so to not know this side of the family and the history, it's...